Welcome from me, Noel Debien, sitting in for Andrew West. Well, last Saturday, one man in particular emerged out of the chaos in northern Iraq. Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, the leader of ISIL, the self-proclaimed Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant. Well, the Levant, if you understand it, could mean Jordan, Syria, Israel, parts of Egypt, even parts of Turkey. So it's a big claim. Al-Baghdadi claiming to be the new caliph and calling all Muslims around the world to move to his new Sunni Muslim stronghold. You may have seen that video posted on Saturday of al-Baghdadi addressing men attending a mosque in Mosul, Iraq's largest northern city. That's the mosque where he executed its Sunni imam, Mosul Muhammad al-Mansuri, along with 13 other Sunni religious leaders. Not hard line enough for al-Baghdadi and ISIL. In his sermon, he called on all Muslims to obey him. Some Australians have already by joining the armed struggle in Syria and Iraq. To shed some light on what lies behind the terrible conflict during this Ramadan month, Dr. Samina Yasmeen, Professor of Political Science and International Relations at UWA, is in our Perth studios. Dr. Samina, ISIL, the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, it cut its teeth in the Syrian war. Australians have joined them. Foreign Minister Julie Bishop said perhaps 150. Melbourne-born Musa Sarantonio certainly says he's there because he tweeted it. Last week, Attorney General George Brandis invited a group of senior imams to Canberra, aiming to stop more Australians from going there. In the UK, we hear reports of 400 imams calling on British Muslims to refrain. Could imams have a real influence, in your view?
I think it depends on the situation, but there is a clear difference between the Muslim migration and the Muslim demography in Australia compared to countries like Britain, Canada, and America. A lot of diversity within Australia in the Muslim community.
76 language groups, I think I'll ask counted.
Exactly, yeah. And even the number of years that Muslims have lived in Britain is a lot longer than the number of years that they have lived in Australia. Having said that, how do we see the role of imams? I think imams can tell other people who have not thought about engaging in jihad or leaving Australia to go elsewhere and remind them of their duty as a minority religious community living in Australia as citizens. But beyond that, there's a limit. And that is because people who get mobilized to go and participate in jihadi activities, they don't necessarily engage in social activities where the messenger is very clearly articulating the message of jihad in a public forum where they can pick it up and then they can go. So given that, if imams are not mobilizing people openly to go and fight jihad, then getting them to counter the jihadi message is, I think, expecting too much. Even if they're willing to give that message, there is always the danger that those who are not going to listen to these messages would go underground, and it would also confirm to them that if they do want to engage in these activities, they have to stay away from these imams. I'm not sure if just relying on imams is the answer to countering this tendency to go and participate in what is not homegrown terrorism, but outbound terrorism.
There is another strategy in Britain I'm aware of that's engaged Muslim women to encourage young men not to go to Syria and Iraq. Could that be an effective strategy, you think, through mothers and sisters and wives?
I think that would be actually a better strategy. And if we look at the way jihadi groups have mobilized young people to engage in jihad, they've actually used women as the mobilizers. And so if we want to counter that, we could rely on women as nurturers within the family spheres to give an idea that it is not Islamic to go and kill people indiscriminately in this so-called jihad, and give people the idea, what does it really mean to be a Muslim in today's world?
Historically, I'm aware that the caliphates like the Ottomans and the Umayyads, they officially protected religious minorities like Christians and Jews. But we've now have reports that the Imam of Mosul, Muhammad al-Mansuri himself, a Sunni Muslim imam, has been executed by ISIL, along with 12 other Sunni imams who are not hardline enough. Now, Email Shimon Nona, the Chaldean Archbishop, says thousands of Christians have left Mosul. He says churches have not had mass there since ISIL's takeover. How do events like these reflect on Baghdadi's claims to be the caliph?
Let me first of all look at his action, and I think they're anything but Islamic. They really grow out of this belief that anyone who provides a notion of what it means to be a Muslim and has weapons to support it can go to the extent of being as barbaric as he has been and as he has encouraged his own group members and the followers. Once somebody is convinced of the authenticity of their idea of Islamic notions and identity, and if they have weapons, they engage in completely barbaric acts.
And more specifically on the claim to be a caliph, how would you evaluate that in light of the way he's been behaving?
Well, the whole notion of caliph really is so sophisticated, and it's historically based that for anyone to get up and claim that he's a caliph really needs to be laughed at. To give you a sense of how the whole institution of caliphate evolved, it really evolved after Prophet Muhammad passed away and the question of succession engaged as to who should be the caliph. Now, among the Shias and the Sunnis, the division existed because some argued that it was in the family line and so they supported Ali to be the next leader, and others argued that Abu Bakr, Umar and Uthman should be. But essentially, based on that experience, the first four caliphs, there's a relatively general consensus that caliphs are not vice-regents of Allah because that would give them the same status as prophets. The next most accepted position is that caliphs are the vice-regents of the prophets. So they carry the message and the activities and actions that Prophet Muhammad established while he ruled Medina as the Muslim leader. There are others who argue that Muslim community is really the whole basis for this caliphate, and so caliphs are the vice-regents of the Muslim community. So the Muslim community's rights and responsibilities in some ways even override the caliph's opinions. Given that, the question is that which aspect of caliphate is he assuming to be appropriate for him?
So in effect, you're arguing that among Muslims, there is some consensus that the ummah or the community is the source of the appointment and, I suppose, authority of a caliph. There's another which sees it as a much more prophetic role falling in the line of Muhammad himself, which would have more control from the centre. What is al-Baghdadi looking for? What is he asking for?
Well, what Baghdadi is claiming is that he is the vice-regent in the same tradition as the first four righteous caliphs. He doesn't say it in so many words, but that's the message that he communicates. And because there's this understanding that caliph can either be chosen by people or a caliph can be nominated by the preceding caliph, what he has employed is two different strands of logic. One is that he's a vice-regent of prophet. So therefore, he has a right to establish the Islamic State along the lines that he thinks Prophet Muhammad established. Secondly, which I find very interesting, is that he points out that he carries over from where Osama bin Laden lived, and he refers to Osama bin Laden as Sheikh. So in that sense, what he's implying is that Osama bin Laden really had a dream for establishing caliphate, and Zawahiri, after Osama bin Laden's assassination, has really not picked up that message. But because the responsibility was given to al-Baghdadi, he has put that into practice. So he's meeting two criteria. One is that he is committed to prophetic message, quote-unquote, according to his understanding. And second, he has been nominated. Because there is also this body of knowledge which came about later on in Islamic history, that you could be a caliph purely because you have established control by using force.
These are like the Umayyads or the Ottomans that we knew even until last century. I think it was abolished finally around 1924 by Kemal Ataturk. That's what we knew even up to most recently, isn't it?
Exactly. Now, that tradition, what he's done is that he's revived that. But the interesting bit is that Muslims actually never were able to agree among themselves once the caliphate was abolished as to who should rule this caliphate. what Baghdadi is doing is that he is picking up those ambitions, which we also see in the discussion of caliphate by Hizb ut-Tahrir. And he says that having occupied a land, he has taken on the right and the responsibility to establish an Islamic state along the prophetic tradition.
He's asking for more than the Ottomans had, though, isn't he?
Oh, yes, but that's because the way Ottomans took over the mantle of being the caliphs was very different. And only gradually, once they had occupied the territory where a caliph was existing, that they finally decided that they
we're the caliphs. We've gone far enough. We are now the caliphs. Well, can I ask you, Imam yes. Fazl Abdul Rauf, of course, who's working on the Cordoba Initiative, something you know well about, he's been studying the Islamic Rule of Law Index. This is the thing which decides or constitutes what a good Islamic state is. Mm-hmm. And he says that determining the genuineness of any claim by this al-Baghdadi to be caliph is virtually beyond Islamic jurisprudence at this point, because it's just not achievable. Nobody could test it, nobody could agree. Is he right, do you think?
Oh, absolutely. Because I think the phenomena that we are observing at the moment is one where somebody has used force, power, exploited the inability of the Syrian government to respond appropriately to what we referred to in the past as Arab Spring, and also the divisions within the opposition that fought against Bashar al-Assad and extended his position in and control in Iraq as well. Given the fact that he has come to power by use of force and not through a process that somebody could actually say that there was a state that was converted into some sort of an Islamic state and then the leader took on the mantle of being the caliph, all we can say is that this is a rogue state and somehow the head of the state has decided to identify himself as caliph and that doesn't give him the right.
What does this mean for Christians and Muslims? Are we going to actually see an entirely Muslim area, for example? Will Christians simply need to move, be practical? Will Shiites simply need to move to be practical? Is that what's happening here?
I think if we look at the maps that al-Baghdadi and ISIL has published, their idea is not to remain limited to the area that they've already occupied, but extend their power both in the East, in the West, and even in Europe. And so whether you are there or not, even if you move out of that area, they're coming to get you. Now, what does that mean for people living there? I think given the fact that they have a very particular idea of what Islam is all about, which has grown out of really a whole lot of instability, and I would argue strongly, lack of knowledge about Islamic principles, they're likely to apply their principles with the same vengeance that we saw in Afghanistan when Taliban were in power. In fact, it could even get worse than that. So it doesn't matter whether you're Shia, Sunni, or whether you're Christian, Jew, or Muslim, or any other religion, their understanding of an Islamic state, I think, poses a threat to everyone who does not agree with their idea of Islam. So human rights violations, they will increase, which, if we go into this very strict Islamic principles, is extremely un-Islamic. Because very logically speaking, a caliphate, let's for the sake of argument, we think that it is a caliphate, has a history of providing opportunities for not just its Muslim citizens, but also people of other religions.
The people of the book, the Christians and the Jews.
Mm. Exactly. And in fact, if we look at historical empires, a lot of literature was brought into the Muslim thinking because there were people who were able to translate them and they were of different religious backgrounds. So the caliphate, if it was established along really strict Islamic lines, would ensure that everybody is treated fairly, humanely, irrespective of their religious background. I don't see that happening here. I think this is a group that has grown out of misunderstanding of Islamic knowledge, but has grown out of access to power due to instability in the region and in these countries and has managed to run its course in a way that suddenly is posing a threat. We could see some similarity with Tehrik-e-Taliban Pakistan because small, uncontrollable group, gradually because the state can't manage, they extend their influence and then they can pose a threat.
Dr. Samina Yasmeen, also a director of the Centre for Muslim States and Societies at the University of Western Australia. You're with me, Noel Debien, standing in for Andrew West on the Religion and Ethics Report.